My wife and I and the kids, they actually just kind of shifted out. I think they're going next door to the Smile Center to play. We've been back from South Africa since March of this year. And we were there for the last year. We went through, have you guys ever heard of YWAM? I know some of you have that were here when I shared last time. We were with an international youth organization called YWAM. So we went through a discipleship training. Our main goal for that year was to kind of go and see what the Lord was going to do. We committed to go to kind of take that step out. It was the second time we've been in the country for a year. So last year was our second full year in South Africa. And the first time we were with a Calvary Chapel church plant on the other side of the country from Cape Town. And so we went through the school, graduated from the school, and then ended up on staff with YWAM and just kind of testing the waters to kind of see what the Lord was going to do and if there was any kind of more long-term thing, that he was going to open an opportunity for. And so that's what we did this last year. And I just want to share a little bit before I get into more of that. You can say what we were doing then and what we're doing now is like justice and restoration type work. So what is justice? Justice is right order, and restoration is returning things back to right order. And I know it's cliche that a lot of justice-oriented organizations and mission work go to Micah 6:8, but who's got two thumbs and is going there anyway? This guy. So Micah 6 is... Israel is complaining to the Lord and hyperbolizing what God is requesting of them, saying, are we supposed to bring thousands of rams? Are we supposed to bring tens of thousands of rivers of oil? And Micah responds with a word from the Lord that says in verse 8 that, what does the Lord require but to do justice, to love kindness or mercy, and to walk humbly before the Lord your God? Which Israel wasn't doing that already. You know, they were kind of that same pattern that we see through Israel all throughout the Old Testament, is that shifting back and relying on the law instead of relying on the Lord, and becoming a matter of their works and not a matter of their hearts, you know, desiring to serve the Lord. And so justice, do justice, love mercy or kindness, and to walk humbly. I don't think that those are three separate things. I think that they all work together. And so if we look at it backwards, if we walk humbly, if we're walking humbly before the Lord, then we'll desire kindness and we'll desire mercy for other people. When it becomes just for ourselves, then we're no longer walking humbly. We're thinking selfishly. And then we're already beginning to stray and miss that mark. And then when we're walking humbly and we're desiring mercy for other people, we naturally want to see justice when we see unmerciful things happen. Did you tie the kids up? For those who don't know, that's my wife Emily back there. It's kind of a rodeo at the house. I'm the clown that runs around and distracts everybody. Well, she does all the roping. Where was I? So, justice, this wasn't planned. This came to me last night, and I've been reading it over and over again because I didn't want to read through it. So, we'll desire to see justice for other people when we're walking right. So, and that justice, again, is right order, which, by the way, is what Christ did. He came and died on the cross to bring justice to us and put things back in the right order so that we can have a right standing relationship. So do justice, love mercy, walk humbly before God. That's what God requires of us. Another thing something that's really out of order because of the fall is our value, and I think it's very closely tied to justice and mercy is our value. In Genesis, we see this amazing creation, not just the earth, not just amazing life, but as well as like the solar system, the sun, everything. It's this amazing creation, and every time God created something, what did he say? Good. It's good. And what did he say when he created man? Good. It's very good. Yeah. And we were created in God's image, and that's where our value comes from. And when things became out of order was when Adam and Eve decided to, when Adam and Eve sinned, and things began to shift, and we lost that right order. And because of our sin, because of sin, things are no longer in right order. But also because of our sin, things are no longer in the right order. We have things like racism, hate, prejudices, slavery, exploitation, selfishness, self-harm, self-hate. They're all founded out of misplaced value, which our value comes from God. Our value doesn't, we don't find our value in our job status, education, race. It comes from God. And so that's one of the passions of ours, is to help bring that justice, not just into things like social justice issues, but also as well bringing justice into individuals, understanding our value to God and understanding other people's values to God. And when those are in the right order, we see justice. It was cold in here, so I robbed the thrift shop outside. But then standing in front of people and talking, which I am not very good at, or at least I don't like it. I'm an extrovert, you know, I'm supposed to be able to like this and really enjoy the attention, but I've grown up a drummer my whole life, so I usually like to hide in the back. You know, I can be on front, just put me in the back up front. So before I started doing all this justice-related stuff and overseas stuff, right out of Bible college, I went to Calvary Chapel Bible College in 2000 and 2001, I guess. And around 2002 or 3, I started working with my dad here at Youth Incorporated in Wired. And we used to be on Main Street, as a lot of you know. And there was this group of girls that were coming in. So we had the music venue and the coffee shop, just like we do now. And there was this group of girls that were coming in pretty regularly. And we knew that there was something a little off about this group of girls. They were coming in mid-morning, and, well, first of all, they were Russian-speaking, but they were Asian in appearance. And I know now that Russia and China share a border, but I didn't think about it then, and it was just really weird to me. But that wasn't the only thing that was kind of off. I mean, not that that's off, but you know what I mean. Track with me here. Or be patient while I keep track. They were also kind of dressed inappropriate, and there was just like an air about them, almost like a sexual air even, and more than just because they were wearing like a spaghetti top or spaghetti strap, SpaghettiOs, I don't know. But there was this almost something even spiritually off about them. And so we kind of just figured maybe they were prostitutes. We weren't really sure. They were younger and prettier, but, you know, most of the prostitutes that I've seen around Evansville don't qualify as younger or prettier. Not all the time, at least. So these girls were coming in, and eventually they stopped coming in, and we just kind of figured that they were prostitutes. A couple months goes by, and we got a visit by an Evansville police detective, and he was asking us about what we've seen them, you know, like we had an internet cafe, if they were doing anything, if we noticed anything on the internet, if they ever had company that we thought was odd, any weird meetings or interactions. And well, it turns out that they were suspected, human trafficking victims. So that was kind of my first run in with human trafficking victims, really just human trafficking in general. You know, at that point, I didn't really know that it was a thing, and maybe I had once heard of it, but I was like, in Evansville, no. You know, like the sleepy little river city. And so that was like the beginning of my realizing I don't understand what this thing is. And, you know, like I was thinking like Hollywood, you know, like if you were to say, you know, people are being trafficked and sold as modern day slaves. And, you know, I would think that like it was like masked kidnappings off the street. Hi, Todd. And mass kidnappings off the street and big crime syndicates and big mob bosses and all kinds of sneaky stuff, you know, dark alley, only when it's raining at 3 a.m., you know, moving people around and shuffling cages and chains. But here were these girls that were just walking in, like our front doors, into our coffee shop, buying our coffee, using our internet. And it was the beginning of my pursuit of understanding what is happening. And a lot of that was also breaking down a lot of misconceptions about what human trafficking is and how it's done. So let me share another story with you. It's about a girl named Katie. Katie was she's a South African girl, or is a South African girl, and she was in Joburg, and she liked the gambling machines, and so she was going to the gambling machines pretty regularly, and saw this girl at the machines kind of over and over again over the course of time, and they became friends eventually. And so she, you know, is developing this relationship with this other girl, friendship, and eventually her friend says, "Hey, I'm moving to Cape Town to be with my boyfriend, and I'd like for you to come with me. I can give you a job, a place to stay, and we can even pay for your bus ticket." And so her friend really encouraged her to take this opportunity and start a new chapter in her life. And so Katie naturally does. She gets there the first night, and the boyfriend gives her a couple rules that she has to follow. The first rule is at 7 o'clock, she's got to put on something sexy. The second rule is, after she's done that, she needs to take her wake-up drug, and then she's got to go out and find clients to help pay for her drugs and for her rent. So it wasn't long before Katie found herself actually being trafficked for sex. And eventually she tries to escape, and she's found quite quickly, and she's forced into a car where she's waiting for the boss to come talk to her. So she cries out to God and asks God to deliver her, to rescue her. She's trapped, and she needs this salvation. And in the middle of her crying out, the boss comes in, gets in the car, threatens her to put her, to lock her up if she's not going to comply and obey. So with not many options before her, she complies. But in her heart, she still had some fight in her. And so she complies. He puts her back on the street, and he takes off. A client pulls up. She jumps in the client's car and asks the client, begs and pleads with the client to take her to the police station. So no longer really in the mood, the client lets her have the, I think it was like about $11, 150 Rand. About $11. Lets her keep her $11 without the exchange for the services, but doesn't take her to the police station. He just wants to get out of there. So he takes off and leaves her with a little bit of cash. And she buys some time with her boss by saying that the client wanted to keep her for the night and was going to pay for the whole night. So she takes a little bit of cash, the little bit of time that she just bought, and makes it to a women's shelter. So the women's shelter, she gets connected with a social worker when she tells them her story. And that social worker takes her over to a safe house called Escape. And a lot of you guys already know about Escape. And so there, she gets to this women's safe house for specifically for trafficked women. And kind of that begins her journey of restoration. And unfortunately, though, it was only after she'd contracted HIV, as well as being pregnant by one of the clients. And she wrote a letter, I think it was actually a text message, to the director at Escape once she had left Escape and kind of, you know, finished their program and stuff like that. So I'll read the letter to you. It says, "Hello there, love. Let me share the good news of God's blessings to me with you. Today my aunt offered me her shop to run for myself starting from the end of this month. And guess what? I am so in love with God because he kept his promise. He said he would never leave me and Jay, her new baby, and he will never forsake us. He is with us every step of the way." So her story is a true story that happened. And as a lot of you probably know already, Escape is who Emily and I are on staff with. And after we finished our DTS back last year, the discipleship school, we staffed with Escape, which is a ministry of YWAM. And we came back, and we weren't sure exactly what we were going to do. We weren't sure. We had some possible opportunities in Florida with another YWAM down there, and we really weren't sure what was going to happen. And we actually, in the beginning, when we first arrived back, we didn't want to go back to South Africa. And we were trying really hard to be called to Florida. And so we actually go down to Florida and meet with the YWAM base there and some other churches and some other people that we know in the area. And the Lord was not letting us let go of South Africa. And it was in a weird way. It's hard to explain because we didn't want to go back, but we couldn't stop feeling like we were going back. I don't know, maybe it's like the fly flying towards the light, you know. Like, he knows he's not supposed to, and he's trying everything he can, but it's just there. We're just kind of being drawn in. Or maybe a better analogy would be with the Death Star and when they get in the tractor beam. I don't know, sorry. And so Emily and I had talked about it and prayed about it, and we decided, okay, we'll be open to the idea of going back to South Africa. And if the Lord, I think it's a Calvary saying, where God guides, God provides. And that's kind of what we decided. You know, where God guides, God will provide. So if he wants us and is guiding us back to South Africa, he'll provide something for us to do. For me, you know, Emily stays with the kids and we homeschool, and so that's her main focus. And for me, my main focus, there's not much of a place for me at a women's safe house. When we were there on staff, I was on an advisory board and fundraising board for the organization, and I did like some maintenance and stuff like that around the property. And it wasn't enough for us to just kind of go over there full time and have meetings twice a month and then do construction and stuff like that every once in a while when it was needed. And we also volunteered with some other ministries, but we were technically on staff with the safe house. So God guides, God provides. It was literally like 2.5 days after we decided, okay, we'll wait and see what God provides, is when we woke up to, we are still in Florida, we woke up to a message from the director's husband, who is a good friend of mine, of the safe house, and they just passed their evaluation. So officially, Escape is the only safe house for trafficked women in all of South Africa, at least officially recognized by the government. There might be some other nonprofits doing something similar. And in their evaluation, the government was asking them if they were able to even, open a safe house for children. And there's currently, or at least last I heard, it's been 6 weeks or so, but last I heard there was a child as young as 3 years old in the system that was being trafficked, or that was rescued from being trafficked, and there is no place to actually place the child without just placing him in just some other children's home, which I'm not really sure how those really go in South Africa. It's pretty complicated. it's definitely not like our system here. So we were actually the first pick to come in and open and run the children's safe house. And so that was 2 or 3 days after Emily and I decided, okay, we'll be open to the idea. But the Lord's got to, you know, he's got to bring something to us, because I wasn't really feeling motivated to kick down a door in South Africa and say, I'm here to help. I felt like I just did that. So that's what we're doing with Escape. That's the story about Katie. It's just one of the stories about the ladies that come through the safe house there. So let me share with you just a few statistics. So the thing about human trafficking is it's a hidden, secretive industry. And how do you measure something that you can't see? So there's some debate on the numbers, and there's a lot of speculation that it's even more gigantic than what the bigger numbers are. So I'm just going to go with what the Department of Homeland Security's global numbers were. And that is, it's a pretty common one. I think it's kind of a good middle of the road. And just with some other people that I've known, like my brother-in-law, for example, he worked 7 years with Direct Victim Services in the UK. And just based on the numbers that they had coming in, and then kind of using that as their baseline, and him doing the numbers just in the UK, and then taking that across the world, it's actually much bigger than this number. But we'll just go with the Department of Homeland Security's numbers, and that's 21 million. So globally, every year, 21 million people are being bought and sold as slaves. It's the second largest criminal industry in the world, next to drug trafficking. And so 68% of human trafficking is labor trafficking. 22% is sex trafficking, which is still like 5 million people. The crazy thing about it is only 22% of global trafficking is sex trafficking, but it makes up for 66% of global trafficking profits. A sex trafficked victim brings in about, on average, 6 times more a year than a labor trafficked victim. And then 26% of all trafficked victims are children. So the need is obvious, and it's big. And I believe, as believers, that we are called to restore right order, to do justice, love mercy and kindness, and to walk humbly. So you guys have actually been a big part of us doing that. I'm not sure if everybody knows, but the church here has partnered with us since we went the first time in 2010 with the church plant in South Africa. And so if you guys would, keep us in your prayers. Pray for us regularly. It's difficult being in the country sometimes. We miss home a lot. And, you know, with five kids, oh, Lord have mercy, 4 kids.
Prediction?
With 4 kids, I was counting myself. I'm the fifth. Or the first, maybe. With 4 kids and stuff, you know, and I've got a big family. Emily has a big family. And, you know, it's easy to miss home. As well as we're stepping into kind of a different level of work that we're just stepping into a different level. You know, we've got a lot of things we've got to figure out, because opening a home for children is a lot more, there's a lot more to it than it is for the women. Because with women, we're dealing with adults. So they can just leave. We can deem them, you know, like they're doing well. They've got their feet underneath them. You know, they can, if they're ready to go, they can go. If they're not ready to go and they want to go, they can go. But it's not so with children. And so we've just got a lot of things to figure out, a lot of procedures to think through and pray about and work out. You know, things like we've got like a 13-year-old kid who wants to leave. We can't just let her go, or him. And so all of that stuff, as well as just it's a hard ministry to be in. There's just a lot of pain in the victims, and you know, like, without the understanding of what they've been through, a lot of times you just think that they're just kind of like jerks, you know, just kind of cold, hard people. And so it's a hard ministry. Keep us in your prayers. If anybody would like to partner with us, you know, like, there's no such thing as too small of a gift. And I don't think it was it a parable? Parable or story? Either way, it's Jesus was talking about the woman who brought her two copper coins to the altar, right next to the men that were bringing buckets load of money, and her gift was actually the bigger one. And so it's not too small to be a part of what we're doing, and we can't do this without people partnering with us. And if you're interested, I would like to talk to you after the service, you know, about more how to do that. So that's what we're doing, and we're hoping by November we can be taking off. We really want to get the project started by January, and we've got, you know, like, we got to find a place to live and that kind of stuff. So a lot of settling in we've got to do, and I really would like to get the project really hit the ground running first of the year, at, you know, full steam. We're currently at about 40% of our total budget, and we've got donors as small as $10 a month, all the way up to one that's $1,200 a month. So, I was thinking about this last week, that just kind of a picture of support raising is like the hardest thing for me. I hate asking people for money. And I was talking with the pastor from New Beginnings, Doug Horner. He's the youth pastor, technically, I think. And his experience with support raising in the past. And he was just talking about how it's the smaller support that actually keeps you running. So I was thinking about what he was saying and praying about it, and I just saw like a house made of big stones, big giant stones, only a few stones to make this whole house. If one of those stones fail, the whole house comes crumbling down. But a house that's made with many bricks, if you lose a brick, it's surrounded by other smaller bricks that help sustain the house. And so so that's kind of what we're aiming at, to get this support and meet this budget, as small bricks. And I just thought it was kind of cool, because it is such a struggle to raise support and ask people for money. You'd think I'd be good at it, since I grew up as a missions kid with my father, but I'm not. So, does anybody have any questions? Breck.
Just, I'm not sure I follow. Is this a group that you're going down to join, or are you starting the group yourself?
Good question. So, YWAM is the main missions organization, and the Escape is a ministry of YWAM. So originally they used its nonprofit number and its complete covering of YWAM. And as Escape has grown, they've applied for and are their own nonprofit now, and they have been for a few years, I think. And they still have kept their covering, their spiritual covering, accountability, business practices, and that kind of stuff. It's all accountable under YWAM. And so we are opening the Children's Safe House for Escape. And with Escape. So it'll be the Escape home for children. Yeah. And then we're considering Youth Incorporated our sending organization. So all of our support comes through Youth Incorporated. And yeah, it's kind of tricky. It's kind of like, are you with Youth Incorporated? Are you with YM? Are you with Escape? Are you doing your own thing? Yes.
You almost have to with the children because you've got to protect them from. You've got a plan for classes and things like that for teaching them. And
yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a long-term program that this is until they become an adult.
Right. I don't know if. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully in a year from now I can answer that question better.
How many children are you planning to be able to accommodate?
It depends on the facility that we find.
How many children are at Escape at any one
time? There are, last I heard, there were 8 women there when we left in March. And so we've got 2 houses for the women. There's a phase 1 and phase 2. And I met with the director and the assistant director with a Skype meeting. What was that? A couple months ago, I guess, early summer. And we decided that we could start actually taking in the 14 to 17-year-olds by kind of shuffling around the houses. We would close the phase 2 house and have phase 1 and phase 2 in the other, in the one house. And then open the second house for the 14 to 17 year olds. We don't have like 12-year-old kids and 17-year-old kids all living in the same house. And so we would still have to have at least a minimum of 2 facilities anyway when we're completely, open to all ages. Yes. Right. So the director and founder of Escape, she's actually Swiss and her husband is Indian. And they have to raise all of their support, 100% support for their family's needs. All of the money that we get from the government goes straight back into the facility, as well as other fundraising that we have to do because we just don't get enough money from the government to be able to do everything. Luckily, right after I left is when their evaluation started, and luckily they were in love with the place, and they actually increased the funding. One of the things I worked on was a fundraising board because we were looking at being broke by the end of this year, at the beginning of this year. And then they got, I'm not sure what the exact increase was, but they got a significant increase that pushed us a lot farther down the road.
Some of the foundation stones of buildings and places that you need to rent, et cetera.
Right. Yep.
So I've got a couple of questions.
Sure.
So if we were to do a program like that here,
as far as that goes, we take all the, like the women all come to what we call base worship. So YWAM is actually a pretty big, YWAM Musenberg in Cape Town is a pretty big YWAM base. There's about 300 staff and there's always students. So they run about 4 DTSs a year, 4 discipleship training schools a year. And they have from 10 to 80, about 15 to 80 students per class, as well as they have a Nations to Nations school. They have a, what's it called? Something with the word nations in it. They run some School of the Nations courses. They have a big School of Biblical Studies, and that school is always really full. So there's probably between 150 to 300 students, depending on the quarter, as well as the staff. And so the Escape residents, they always come to the base worship, and I think they've got like Bible teaching and stuff. And I mean, it's pretty clear. Like if you can go to Escape, I think it's s-capehome. I'll look it up. If I have it actually. It's on a support letter. I brought support letters if anybody would like a letter. The website's on there. But, you know, Escape's goal is kind of holistic healing for trafficked victims. That includes spiritual healing and spiritual restoration. No one housing victims. We're a part of a broader South African network of other ministries that are addressing and countering human trafficking. A21 is a big one. I don't know if anybody here has heard of A21, the A21 campaign. It's actually based out of Hillsong, I think, originally. And it's massive. It's a massive organization. I was actually on staff with A21 for a day, and I didn't feel like it was a good fit. But they run the South African resource line for human trafficking. And right before we left, a new resident came in to the safe house that was sent by Escape. Or I'm sorry, that was sent by A21. And so there's about six or seven organizations, I think, that we all kind of work together and communicate with, and but no one that's actually housing trafficking victims. We're the only one. And actually, after this last evaluation, I haven't heard anything more about it since. But there was talk of the government wanting to replicate Escape's model, having at least one replication in every province in the country.
Under their direction, under the government's direction, or
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Western Cape, Eastern Cape, whatever Joburg is in. KwaZulu-Natal. Soweto is, it's right outside of Joburg. I think it probably shares the same province as Joburg. Gutenbog or something like that, maybe. Gutentong. So there's maybe five.
Nine.
Are you that educated on South Africa, or did you Google it?
Yeah. So there's nobody else in South Africa doing what God is calling you all to do.
Not that the government is recognizing as official.
Do you know of any organizations anywhere that are working to house and raise children who have been?
I don't know about children. There's a ministry, what's the one in Florida?
Selah
Freedom. There's a safe house for adult women in Sarasota. But as far as children, I'm not sure.
Surely somewhere there's a resource for you guys to consider their model as you're praying about what to do with yours. Not that you would replicate theirs completely, but just to, I guess,
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a place in New York that does that? Put on by a Catholic church or something?
I don't know. I don't know about anything specific to trafficked children. There are like teen homeless shelters and stuff kind of throughout the country, and I know that there's some in the East Coast. I know that like the Northwest has a really high homeless teen rate, and there's quite a few homeless teen shelters over there. So as far as minors go, I know that there's homeless shelters, but as far as non-disclosed safe location for trafficked children, I don't know. But, you know, the U.S. has a pretty good system, like a pretty good foster care system. and a lot of good programs and stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's not as much of a need for that here, because we've got the network, the foster system network, that South Africa, I hope they don't ever try that. Or at least give them a good 20 years, and then we'll reassess. But, yeah. Oh, for minors. I'm not sure about that. I mean, I know minors who've been arrested. I was a punk rock teenager once. Come a long way, just with understanding trafficking in general. You know, like, when the girls were coming into our coffee shop, we just kind of, I mean, I guess you could say we judged them. We made a judgment about them that they were probably prostitutes. We didn't treat them any different because we thought that's what they were, but that's just kind of what we assumed they were, and we kind of left it at that, not realizing that there's a good chance they were actually trafficked victims. And that same issue is, you know, has been going on with the police department, treating these trafficked victims. When they find them breaking the law, they treat them like lawbreakers and criminals. And, you know, we give them records and jail time and in and out of court and stuff like that, and just kind of making their difficult life even more difficult, not realizing that they are actually being forced into what they're doing. And so departments, police departments all across the world are actually, you know, with a lot of help, and mostly because of, you know, nonprofit organizations like Escape and A21 and a number of others that are going in and educating police officers, you know, and training them. Here are the signs to be looking for. Here's good questions to ask to find out. Because a lot of times the women won't even say if they get arrested. They won't confess it. The traffickers keep such deep claws of just deep claws in them, like with all kinds of threats and manipulation, stuff like that. Sometimes it's threat of deportation. Well, they bring them into another country and, you know, we're going to turn you in. You're going to be deported, or we're going to hurt your family back at home. You know, drugs is another really big thing. If you make a victim dependent on the drug, they're going to come back by themselves. So, yeah, with because of a lot of nonprofit organizations, faith-based and non-faith-based, a lot of training with police officers and stuff like that have gone a long way with actually pursuing and bringing true justice and restoration, or at least beginning it for these ladies. They usually come in from the police department. I know that we've received residents just because they've arrested ladies and, you know, found out that they were traffic victims. The resource line that A21 runs, when they have somebody get rescued through the resource line, A21 sends them over to Escape. And, you know, like when we did the Justice Discipleship Training School, and so we had classes in the mornings, and then once a week we had local outreach. And this is before we did our big 3-month full-time outreach. So the three-month lecture phase, once a week we had outreach, and we divide up into teams. And we actually were in three different teams, and the team I was on, we would divide up into two teams. And I think they actually were doing this every day with different schools and stuff. And so our school was, I think it was Thursday. But we would split up, and then one group of us would stay back at the office, and we would just kind of pray and intercede for the streets and for the other team who's going out onto the street. And within about a 3 or 4 block walk from the office was the highway called the M5. that a lot of women were prostituting on. And this particular stretch was right off of a big township, a really, really impoverished area. And so most of the prostitution that was happening on the M5 wasn't trafficking. It was just, you know, like school fees are due. And so, you know, moms would go out and try and make some money. And so we would, the one team would stay and pray, and the other team would go, and we would try and just kind of, if we saw a lady working the street, we just kind of talk to her. And usually we would, there was usually about five of us that would walk the street. And usually like one guy and one girl would kind of walk ahead of the rest of the group. And sometimes it was just a girl and a girl. Never two guys walking ahead. There's always a female present in the leading walking group. And the rest of us would kind of stand back. And so they would approach. That way, you know, there wasn't like a group of like five people surrounding a lady trying to sell herself. And so then we would just kind of strike up conversation with her and ask if we can pray for her, just kind of see, you know, what needs she had. And there was the staff from that. So that was also a ministry called Justice Acts, which was just like Escape, was under the covering of YWAM. And so the staff from Justice Acts, actually, they knew a lot of these ladies and were going into the township once a week and going to their houses and, you know, taking them gift baskets and just finding ways to love on them. I think they were doing Bible studies and inviting the girls to Bible studies and stuff like that. And I don't know if anybody's ever come from that to Escape, but that was just another way that they would minister to the prostitutes. An interesting thing is another ministry of YWAM there is called MeCat. It's the Media Campaign Against Human Trafficking. And it's a big Nigerian guy named Alex Abuk. And Alex has a ministry, aside from all the media stuff that he makes and does like that to raise awareness and education stuff, he also has an outreach to the pimps in Cape Town, in like downtown in the city. And he's found that a majority of the pimps are actually being trafficked. They're guys that were promised work in South Africa. So South Africa is like the America of Africa. It's everybody wants, you know, that's where a lot of the resources are. There's a lot of modernization in South Africa, and that's where a lot of people on the continent want to be. They want to make it to South Africa. That's their dream. And so traffickers would go and they would recruit guys for work. And then, you know, soccer is huge. It's like a giant, right? It's like a giant sport everywhere else in the world except for America, which is just like, oh, yeah, I know what soccer is. But it's football. And so in Africa, it's football. And so they would – every kid is just like a great soccer player. Not every kid, but and that's, you know, every little boy's dream is to be a professional sports star. And in Africa, it's very, very common to be soccer. So these traffickers would not only offer these young men, even adults, jobs, but also, you know, there's a soccer league that there's always scouts that come to the soccer games. And, you know, you get a chance at the big shots. And so they accept the offer and they go down there and then they find themselves being manipulated and forced into selling these girls. So even the pimps, you know, like the bad guys that we're ready to just kind of put the whoop on. And, you know, like the ones that we've seen, just like we just are disgusted by the fact that they're selling other girls. You know, they're being forced and manipulated into it. Their families at home are being threatened, and they're also being threatened to be deported. Traffickers will run up debt on their victims and force them to pay it back. They say, well, we brought you here. We paid for your bus ticket. We paid for your clothes. We've been paying for your rent, and we've been paying for your food. And then they also mark it up and say, you know, and it doesn't stop. As soon as they, like, might be close to working off their debt to the traffickers, you know, something new shows up, and then they owe them for that. So it's a mess.
Andy, can we? Oh, okay. Someone might
opportunity. Thanks for listening and your questions. It's nice to know that people are interested.